You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Hey, y'all. What you are about to listen to is one of the guest seminars from the 4th ASGA Fisheries Science Symposium that was hosted in May of 2025 at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. ASGA Science Symposiums aim to foster a collaborative learning environment for industry leaders and guides and brand representatives and retailers, small business owners, media representatives, scientists, and even state representatives. And we were very proud with the crowd that came out and that we had a great representation of all those different categories of stakeholders for our fisheries. This year, we brought some new flair to the presentation topics. We focused on economics. There was a great talk about highly migratory species, and we even took a deep dive into great white sharks. And all three of our guest speakers were the top of their field, world-class, extremely interesting, and fielded a lot of great questions and Q&A sessions at the end. So without further ado, the audio to follow this intro is one of those guest speakers, and we owe a great deal of thanks to Sims Fishing Products. The Sims team has always been supportive of these symposium efforts and making sure that these events happen, that we're able to amplify good science and foster productive conversations. So a great deal of thanks to the Sims Fishing team, to the MBL staff, and to all those who attended our symposium. We present to you one of our guest speakers.
So I'm Ben Meadows. I am a natural resource economist at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Also do outdoor filmmaking, so there's kind of this oxymoron to my life that I'm just comfortable with. You're going to probably see this happen a couple times, of this contrast between the fisheries you know and love and the economics behind them. I don't know if you had a good experience in your econ classes in high school or in college, if you slept through them, but what I know from kind of my experience is that still need it. Okay. Storytelling is king. That is how I communicate with my students. So the way I would warn y'all about how this is going to go down is that this should taste like ice cream, and then you need to leave the room and realize that I've fed you vegetables. Okay, so that's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna bait and switch you into learning today, and I'm helping on making it happen. Okay, so it's a little bit of manipulation, it's a little bit of trickeration, but I want to kind of talk about what is a really interesting kind of perspective about moving the economic conversation from kind of harvesting models to catch and release. And it's really interesting. I had a great conversation yesterday with 2 hours of sleep because I chased around stripers in the bay with Joe Gugino. But I linked up with kind of one of the masters of my field, and I kind of told him what we were doing here and what was going on. And I was like, I feel like this is simple, and I feel like this has been done before. And he's like, it hasn't. He's like, you're onto something here. And so that's why I've got a little more wind in my sails today. And I want to kind of talk to y'all about what we're going to do. So, this is your warning that we are going into vegetables, but it's going to taste like ice cream because look, I put a picture of a fish there. So I'm going to try to make my slides pretty, make this fun. We're going to talk about kind of the standard economic understanding of fishing. Then we're going to talk about the problem with it, especially in your context for stripers. And then what I'm going to lead you to is something that you already know if you're in this room, is that the value that striped bass give you as an angler is way higher than their fillet value. Okay, you already know that. So, you know, again, you've learned all you need to know, but I want to show you why that's economically relevant today. Okay, so that's where we're going, and this is how we're going to do it. Also, shout out to Cody for giving me these wonderful pictures of striped bass, because I know y'all need to see pictures. Y'all don't want to read text. Okay, so as an economist, we measure value with dollars. It's this nice thing. I don't have to speak 14 different languages. I just talk in prices, and everybody understands. markets are this great thing because we know, like, if I was like, hey, dude, can I sell you a gallon of gasoline for $8? You would tell me to get the hell out of the room and move on, right? Because you're like, I know the value of gasoline. If I try to sell you a $45 cheeseburger, you're like, that better be organic and massaged and the cutest cow I've ever seen. It better be a good hamburger, right? You know prices, you know value, right? And in fisheries economics, we still know this to be true. How much is a striped bass worth? Well, let's kill it first, fillet it, take it to a fish market, and then I can tell you the value that that resource gives you, right? That, because that's a monetary instrument that we can all understand. Now, in fisheries economics, I'm just gonna give you a little bit, I promise we're not doing algebra, it's gonna look like it, I promise we're not, okay? But in fisheries econ, we typically represent harvest with the letter Y and the amount of fish swimming out there as X. And that's kind of the title of this talk is talking about, can we move our conversation away from talking about how many we're harvesting to how many fish we're having? Okay? So here's your primer on fisheries econ. Okay? As an economist, and some of you who are business owners, you actually obey this too. How do you know you're doing well? How do you know you're doing the best? You try to get profit the highest. Now in econ, sometimes in natural resources, we kind of make it a little more opaque and we say, we're gonna try to make benefits the highest, right? We want the benefits minus the cost of whatever we're doing to be the highest, okay? Now, when we're talking about classic fisheries, okay? Classic fisheries, not natural resources yet, but just classic fisheries, we're gonna say, look, I know that fish give us revenue, which is the price of a fish that I sell at a fish market, times the amount of fish I sell. Yes, I know I didn't spell quantity right. I know I'm a redneck from Alabama, but I'm trying to remind you why means how much you're harvesting, okay? And then, of course, you don't get to keep this money. That's your revenue. You've got to subtract off your costs, and that's how well your, you know, optimization around fisheries is doing. So realistically, when we think about how well a fishery is doing from an economic standpoint, we're like, basically, how much profit does this fishery give us? Now, if I'm being super nerdy with you, I think you've tracked, right? Revenue, which is the price times the amount of fish I've caught, is actually the cost to go get these fish. I can actually be a little clever here. It costs me to like run the boat to, you know, of course, go harvest these fish. But it also, if there's not a lot of fish to be found, it's really costly to go find the fish. So in fisheries econ, we typically say, look, cost is not just how much, you know, my seine nets or my gill nets or whatever, you know, tactic I'm doing cost. It also, the amount of fish controls the cost from the fishery side. Now, again, I know in this room you're like, Ben, I release striped bass. I don't give a crap about this. I get that. But I want you to know this is the conversation econ has. Your state legislators, your federal folks who work in this realm, this is the way they think. If they call a fisheries economist, they're thinking like this, okay? And if you're like me, you're like, no. I get really happy when I, you know, for those of you who are doing this cheeky schoolie tournament, right? And you're like, no, I get happy when I see lots and lots of fish. I'm getting to that, I promise. But I'm saying this is the world of kind of fisheries econ, okay? Now, we do know, and this is 100-year-old econ, this is nothing new, okay, that there's some problems with just this kind of classic model, okay? The first one, and I've seen this from the shores of Colombia and South America all the way to Alabama, my home state. There is an issue in fisheries econ. Most of y'all know this as the tragedy of the commons. Okay, it's this idea, right, is that if I am, you know, a fisherman in this natural resource and I catch a fish that is harvestable, it's sellable, it's, you know, one that I think I can make money off of, I have no incentive to conserve. And I know I've got to just be cautious when I say that because I think we culturally as fly anglers, we're like, no. The ethos is conservation, but look, if you're trying to make money, right, and I have a sellable fish in my hand and I throw it back, I'm waving money off for someone else to capture at a later point in time, okay? There is no, in the private market, there is no incentive for conservation. There's just not, and we need to acknowledge that, okay? And so for fisheries economics, we've realized this, like I said, for 100 years, And we know that because of this disincentive, fishermen affect one another. And so how do we fix it? We either initiate quotas, which a lot of you are like, okay, now this is sounding more of like what I've heard from the government, okay? We try to, my favorite policy is a landing tax. Basically, not favorite, like I just think it's funny, like you basically bring a fish on shore and it's like, I'm charging you for catching that fish. What are we trying to do from fisheries economics? We're trying to make your cost more expensive so you stop harvesting fish, okay? I didn't put it in here, but gear restrictions, there's a lot of funny gear restrictions across the world. Gear restrictions, when we put those in a commercial market, we are literally saying to a commercial fisherman, I want to make you bad at fishing. You're really good at this. You're harvesting too much. I'm going to make you bad at it, right? Because basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to fix this disincentivization for conservation through some really kind of sloppy ways, okay? And then the most kind of advanced tool is individual transferable quotas. But I hope all of you in this room who value catch and release fisheries, none of these fit our bill, right? None of these really feel like the world we live in. This feels like the commercial side, and you should kind of feel like on the outside looking in, okay? And that's where I've noticed, and again, I'm not like trying to put a like a ta-da moment. That's not it at all. I just am like, There's this conversation I hear fly anglers have. There's this conversation that I hear natural resources economics have, and there's a missing thread between them. And I think that's what this is, okay? What if there's people, really weird people, the kind of folks that, you know, go out with a fly rod and go and catch fish, who just value the fish for being there, right? Who go to like, you know, from my accent, you can tell I fly fish for redfish. Like if I push into a pond in Louisiana and I see 20 happy redfish popping shrimp, that makes me happy. I would pay oodles of money to make that happen with more regularity, right? And the thing that you should realize is that that is nowhere found in fisheries economics, right? And it's not just I have a warmth in my heart. It's like, no, I would pay good money, right? The ASGA folks referenced Captain Bailey Short. Like if I was on a trip with him and I wanted to be like super narcissistic econ, right? I'd be like, yo bro, how much do I have to pay to see those like 20 redfish popping shrimp? I have a monetary valuation in my head of how I want to experience that fishery. But notice none of the tools we're using right now acknowledge that. Basically, your valuations as recreational anglers are not reflected in basic econ models. And so that's a problem. Okay, that's a problem. Okay, and I want to point this out because now this should help you understand why commercial fishermen do not get you, or maybe do not like you, or y'all just don't get along. Okay, you're speaking two different languages. Because what they see, right, is when you return the fish to the water, they're like, that's valueless, right? You catching that fish is wasted time. It's cute that you like to do it as an angler, but it is waste. It is not real. There's no dollars attached to it. There is no, you know, real economic value. And to quote, you know, Lee Corso, like, wait, not so fast, my friend, right? There is value attached to that, but we're having a problem actually figuring out or at least attaching value. But I just want to be clear, right? Look, when I hooked this, like, so this is my buddy Dan with a beautiful redfish. When he pushed that fish off and it swam off, the fish did not charge his Venmo. He did not have to, my buddy George, who was poling the boat, George did not like say, hey man, you owe me 400 beers for that fish, although that would be fair, okay? There was no charge that happened, and basically economists to make fun of us, we were like, well, they paid a license, so that's kind of the same thing. It's like, no, it's not, right? You paying your fishing license is not the same thing as valuing this thing that just happened. And so we need a different tool set. Now, this is where I'm going to lean in and kind of talk a little bit about the fishery that y'all know and love, because I think it's even more complicated when we think about Atlantic striped bass, okay? Because there are commercial fisheries attached to striped bass, that means there's people who are still living in the very classic fisheries econ world. There's also folks who like to catch and kill, okay? And so that means that they, in their head, are like, I'm getting some joy, and I'm not going to walk through these numbers now because I'm realizing not the time and place. But they are getting like catch and kill anglers. They get value from some releases and some catching. But as the conversation I had yesterday, typically how economists have measured this is basically they'll ask a fisherman, like a NOAA survey or something like that, if they have to return a fish to the water, how valuable was returning that fish? Well, if you know catch and kill anglers who are over their bag limit, they're pissed, right, when they hit their bag limit because they're like, shit, I have to throw these back now, right? They're not at, those fish aren't as valuable. So what I'm realizing is that, no, we have three buckets of anglers. We've got commercial, we've got catch and keep, and then we've got catch and release, right? And it's not that I'm like trying to pad y'all's like egos and make you feel good, but it is a different exercise completely because, again, we've anglers who do a lot of catch and release, we're kind of weird. We basically want to make a fish late for a meeting, to quote Mitch Hedberg, and then, you know, that's it. That's all we're doing here. We actually have no interest in harvesting the fish. And again, what we're doing from the policy side is we're not even acknowledging or balancing this kind of crazy act. But what I want to do first is I want to first prove to you that there is value to catch and release fishing. So the thing I want to do, and I'm way out of my league. So Kyle, I'm gonna put you on the spot. Okay. Yeah. What's a dream fish for you when it comes to a striper? Give me the inches.
Jeez, shallow water, 40 inch fish.
Okay. Shallow water, 40 inch fish. All right. I am going to go very hokey. If you hated college, I'm so sorry. We're going to do this live and in the flesh. Thank you for being a loyal, fun partner. So if everybody heard Kyle, okay, his dream fish, right? Shallow, 40 inch fish. I want to know, and we're going to make it active. So if you've got sweaty pits like me, which is about to be fun, okay, who would take that fish for $0? Imagine like I have a boat that's going to take you to that fish, 40 inches shallow water. It's a happy fish. It's going to eat and it's going to cost you $0. Basically a guided trip for free. Who's in? Thank you. We have no more onto the group. Keep your hands up. Okay. I'm going to say, okay, so we got like 50 people in the room. Awesome. So at $0, you're like, oh shit, we have to do math. Yeah, we do. Sorry. Right. There's 50 people who want this 40-inch striper in shallow water, okay? There's 50 of y'all, right? Hands up, I know we're stretching. I know it hurts. All right, $5, who's still in? Yeah, we're doing kind of an auctioneer, it's fun. All right, $10, $20. Damn, y'all love striped bass. $30. Nobody, now we're like, oh, I have to put my hand down, they're gonna judge me. All right, 50, I'm just gonna do 100, 100, 200. All right, we lost some people. You cheap asses. Where was I? Did I say 200? 300.
I'll go four.
400. Damn, 500.
Get out.
600. We're just in the competing game. 700. All right, we lost some people. 800. Yeah, 900. Let's go four figures, 1,000. Oh, wow, oh, we're back up. Now I'm polluting my data. 1,200. 13, 14, okay, so now we have, oh gosh, I gotta mess up my axes here. All right, so fun fact, if you wanted to like call your mom or your wife or your girlfriend, or if you're like hitting on someone in the bar tonight because you're single and you wanna sound nerdy, like I learned about choke points tonight. That sounds a little sus, never mind, I didn't say that out loud, but what you just learned is a fisheries economics concept called a choke point or a choke price, which means the price that everyone bails the market. Does that make sense? So we found out that there's nobody in here who would pay more than $1,400 for that 40 inch striper on the flats, okay? You're now a nerd, congrats, you're on my team, okay? But the other thing that you just did unwillingly, and it was full of tricks and not fair, I was really mean for doing this, we have now created what economists call a demand curve, okay? And all this does is it tells me how much people love striped bass. Here's what I mean, okay? I can basically trace out with your hands, right? When I charge you $0, all of y'all wanted that fish. When I charged, I think it was $1,200, we had like two people in the game, okay? We had two people, and so I know, right, how much like people value these fish with a monetary instrument, right? So basically what commercial fishermen said, I mean, sorry I'm cussing a lot today, I hope that's, have you heard cuss words in New England? In the South, we love them. I thought y'all do. I've heard it.
Tony
brought them up here, good. I'm glad that was a good import. But it's bullshit, right? When a commercial fisherman says what you do is valueless, it's horseshit, because we just saw it, right? I just saw it in the room. Now, let's go ahead and feed the beast with when it comes to like, again, the angst that you may feel as a catch and release angler, you go, but Ben, I didn't pay that, right? I went fishing with Kyle and I paid him a couple of beers and $0 because we're friends. And what you've stumbled upon is the crisis of natural resources, okay? You are, here, you ready for more vegetables?
Yeah.
You are willing to pay? I can find that based on all of your hands. It's on the demand curve. I know how much you value striped bass. What's the problem? A striper charges you $0 to be awesome. And here's the crux. Someone will now say, well, that's $0. That's worthless, Ben. And I said, no. We are just not eliciting a response to let us understand how much people are willing to pay for striped bass. So here you go, more vegetables. I'm so sorry. The distance between these two points is what we call consumer surplus. You're like, Ben, please stop. It's a Friday. I don't want to learn. Sorry, but you are. Consumer surplus means you are getting this benefit in the market that you did not pay for. Now, before you go, that's not real. Okay, let's start here. There is gonna be consumer surplus attached to this. Are the folks from the brewery here?
Not yet.
How much is one of these beers gonna cost?
$2 a beer.
$2 or something like that? Some of y'all would pay $5 for that beer. Okay, you get consumer surplus from beer. That's why we do this. Okay, if you've ever been to Walmart or Target or wherever a big box store and they have buy one, get one free, you go, holy shit, I'm in. Why? Because there's consumer surplus. You're willing to pay much more than the market price and you get these nice warm fuzzies because you don't have to pay that price. That is fisheries econ. Now here's the all together. When I think about how valuable striped bass are, I want Kyle, I want Nick, I want Bob. I want all of their values because when I add up all of their values, that's the value of striped bass. All of that is the value of striped bass. This is not. Does that make sense? But what does the market say? They are not valuable. What have y'all just taught me? Y'all really freaking love these fish. We need this to happen in Louisiana, by the way. Okay? Y'all really love this fish. What's the problem? These two worlds are not communicating. Does that make sense? Okay, you've actually learned about half of my introduction to economics course in 15 minutes. So we did good, okay? Now, I did this on the board so we don't have to look at pretty pictures. So how do we actually do this, okay? Economists starting in the 70s and 80s, we realized that this demand curve is a pretty cool tool. We should use it more often. And so we started to produce statistics around what we call revealed preference research. And the preeminent one that I really like is called the travel cost model, okay? And I'm not gonna, again, this is where I lose y'all. Y'all start running for the exits and you start drinking beer. But basically, what I just did in live and in the flesh for stripers, we can do that based on your receipts from coming here, from you booking guides, from you buying beer, from you getting a hotel. I can figure out how much you value, right, striped bass just from you coming on this trip. So this is where I linked up where Tony was talking about me and Redfish. I have a big deal, they're a big deal to me. Basically, I saw this conversation happen in Louisiana. And they're like, well, Bull, you can't tell me that these fly anglers get any value out of Bull Redfish. And of course I went, well, bullshit, yes I can, right? And so I reached out to Tony. I was like, why haven't y'all done this already? And he goes, oh, we ran a survey. We have this data, Ben. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, normally I have to pay to get this data, right? And he's like, no, I've already sampled 200 Louisiana anglers who go for redfish. Do you want it? And I was like, tomorrow. Yeah, I want it tomorrow, okay? And basically what we did is we showed that Louisiana redfish, surprise, surprise, are really valuable, okay? There is a lot of consumer surplus with them, okay? Now, this is a really good tool that helps us understand the valuation of these natural resources. But I want to point out that it's actually a little more fluffy than that, okay? Because here's the thing, if we do this right, and we start to push on markets to show the true value of striped bass, what are we doing? We're saying that striped bass has a lot of value, so what do I want? I want more value. How do I get more value? Like Tony was saying, we have higher stocks. If we have more stocks, what do we have? A higher total valuation. What does that do? That invites more anglers. Now, it goes for the folks who are gatekeeping and they hate other anglers. I'm sorry, we're gonna lose y'all here. But as you have a more robust stock, my kids, they're now interested in fishing. Your nieces and nephews, they're interested in fishing. So they get in. What happens? That pushes up the valuation of the stock. So it's this virtuous cycle that starts pushing up the valuations. So you're like, Ben, I'm excited. This is awesome. What's the missing piece? Well, it's that, right? This is a redneck, right, demand curve. I can't publish that. I can't show that off, right? We actually have to start doing the statistical work. But even then, okay, I've just taken like a general expenditure analysis. So this is saying how much people spend on recreational fishing associated with striped bass. I've used what the estimates that a lot, so I'm, wow, I should have done a trigger warning. Going deep into the weeds of nerddom right now, just really quickly, okay? So what I did is like, I can't have the demand curve, but what can I have? Okay, how much do people spend to go recreational striped bass fishing? It's billions of dollars. Divide that times the amount that the fisheries council says that you folks are killing when you release a striped bass and it goes belly up. And those striped bass are worth around $165 to $1,600 per fish, which is kind of interesting. I didn't even plan this, but it's like, okay, I wasn't pretty far off based on this room, okay? But if I go and pull like the latest like harvesting assessments, those guys are getting around $20 to $30 a fish, okay? So this comes back to the very first thing I talked about is like something you already know. A striped bass released is more valuable than ones that's on the dock, but what's the issue? We don't have this price signal currently in the market. And so if you're like, well, Ben, what do we do about this? I'm gonna be a little humble about this because I was like, oh, I got this. I've got this econ nerd brain that runs a mile a minute. There's actually these fishing models that we can calibrate. I can do the math. So I'm gonna calibrate a model that has all these anglers competing for these resources. And, oh, you can't see it. That's ugly. There's a math joke here that's not gonna land anymore. Basically, so what this was doing was saying like, how much should we harvest? How much should I give recreational anglers? How much should I give commercial anglers? And which one would be the highest level of like inclusive valuation for all of us in the United States? And the thing is it broke the math because, and this is very simple. The math was like, well, you should never give any to commercial fishermen. I was like, that's not right. We're harvesting all this commercial fish. Like, do better math, Ben. So I reran it, and then like redneck Ben brain kicked in. I was like, hey, dummy. If this is true and I'm trying to balance the amount of value and revenue in a resource, why in the world would I trade $1,600 for 23? Like, as the model, the math doesn't math, right? There's no reason to do that. So basically what I'll be doing next is like, let's just, again, acknowledge there's a commercial quota, give those fish stocks to the commercial fishermen, and just have a flat line of like, this is the allocation that goes to commercial fishermen, but realizing that the main amount of value is coming from recreational anglers. Now, I didn't warn y'all, and I probably should have, that like this probably feels not like doom and gloom, like Tony was talking about, but it does feel deeply unsatisfying, right? You're like, this is exciting, Ben, but you're telling me I can't have it. And yeah, that's the issue, okay? Because right now as a kind of an alien, a Southern economist, that sounds like an oxymoron, Southern economist. As an alien to this, I am realizing that there's this weird thing that happens, right? In these fisheries conversations, we say, commercial fishermen, what would you like? And they're like, more fish. It's like, no shit, right? And so, but what I realized as an economist is that if that's the first question, who is always going to lose? Catch and release anglers, because you're the second person to the table. I actually was horrified when I found like this really, I could throw it up here, but it looks like someone vomited in Greek. This economic research study that showed that like this is how it works, right? When you have two competing anglers, so one is recreational and one is commercial, you should allocate stocks about who gets there first. And what I realized is that in that research, it still assumes that people are gonna catch and kill those fish and that's where value comes from. And I'm like, no, the value comes from the experiential part that all of us are having through the resource. So what can we do about this? I think this is where y'all like start throwing rotten tomatoes at me and I run for cover and I go get a beer myself, okay? There's a gap here and I wanna be clear and humble. I don't know what to do about this. Okay, because this seems like a really dumb idea, right? Y'all are the value source of this market, but we can't measure your value, so you get second seat at the table and always lose. So for me, there's gotta be collective action. So actually, when I went through the fisheries literature, which is about as boring as it sounds, there were, in the 90s and early 2000s, there were these AMOs, right? There's this idea that there would be these angling management groups that would represent the interest of recreational fisheries and bargain for them, right? But basically, it was this first mover problem. Nobody wanted to be the first one to do this. It's kind of nerdy. And then basically, there was so much infighting, nothing ever got done. And so I saw in a recent paper from NOAA, basically, there's no record of this working. But I was like, wait. And now this is where it's like, it sounds like I'm getting paid off by Tony. Is Tony still in here? No. It does seem like ASGA is now moving into this realm, right? Getting a bunch of people, advocating for action and saying, no, this is a mismeasurement error. Like, no, catch and release fisheries have value. No, we want a seat at the table. Okay, that can help us bargain this down. This is, again, really rotten tomatoes. I'm gonna run for the exits for this one. I think there's economic tools that we can leverage that really lean on the silliness. Sorry, I'm a young dad. I use silly for much heavier words. We can use this the silliness of human nature to its own to advance our own ends. So there's this concept of net present value, meaning that if I asked you, make sure that Joe's paying attention. Hey, Joe, if I gave you $100 today or $110 in 2 years, what do you want?
$110 in 2 years. No, I'm just kidding. $100.
Yeah, $100 a day every time. That's how everybody acts. You can do the same thing with commercial fisheries. So if y'all could figure out like the prime age of a striped bass, like what you want to see as in an AMO, if I can get millions of anglers there, get them to bargain and pre-buy, especially for a stratified stock like striped bass where it's cohorts, say, hey, I wanna buy half of the 2023 class, okay? But commercial fishermen, I am not giving you the full market rate right now for monetary exchange in 10 years. I'm gonna discount it because I know you're gonna take the deal, right? If we all came together and said, we're gonna give you $1 million to not touch this cohort, right? Instead of the market value in 10 years being 10 million or whatever, I know you're gonna take the $1 million today, but that's mine. As a catch and release collective, we have the rights. And if you wanna know where this is all going, like if you want a grand sum, we just need rights. And I'm putting myself in there because I'm a catch and release angler too, if you can't tell, okay? We need property rights because once I have a right to a Louisiana redfish, once I have a right to a striped bass, right, then we can actually manage the stock. And so then for the commercial anglers, like, yo, I want this fish more than you do. Actually, like, imagine if I could, like, do a selfie camera and there was 50,000 people in the room right now, right? If there's 50,000 of us in the room, and we all bought in for that stock, we can pre-buy out a lot of these commercial fisheries. And again, some people are like, well, that's just kind of weird and woo-woo. It's like, no, this is economics, right? We're saying, I see the value of this resource, I see it coming down the pipe, and I want it. And I have the monetary instrument to do it. That's just econ, okay? Now, it's a collective action problem. You need lots of people so that that's not a heavy, like, again, that's a lot of money, okay? I think, revenue for striped bass in 2023 is $14 million for commercial fishing. So there's this that's a lot of money. I've never seen $14 million before, okay? But at the same time, if you divide it by the hundreds of thousands of anglers, it's not. So there's this collect, and then we also need to do the net present value to get that price down. So that's an edgy idea that we can leverage the human preference for dollars today versus dollars tomorrow, okay? The other thing I think is just from a right standpoint, let sustainable fisheries speak first. Like, hey, we claim a quota that we're gonna manage and take good care of, and we wanna be at the table first, okay? Because we, as catch and release anglers, know that the value of a striped bass is if I can catch and release it 20 times, there's value associated every single time, and I wanna manage that, okay? Now, if you're like Ben, again, no one threw anything at me, so that's a win. I'll take my wins. Non-edgy ideas. Some of the stuff that ASGA and you as anglers are already doing is really good. Like the local single campaign, right? If you can drive down the lowered mortality, that's a good negotiating stock, right? You can go to NOAA or whoever is going to be managing the stock. Again, Tony's got my head kind of spun up about you know, federal regulations. If this becomes more of a state's issue, it's going to be a mess. But if you lower mortality, you have a better negotiating point at the table, right? We're basically, again, I'm catching a fish, I'm releasing it, and not a lot of them are dying. So that helps with kind of the advocacy element. And then last thing, I wrote this 2 weeks ago, so I'm really glad that Tony brought this up. We're not collaborating, okay? We need continual improvements in data collection, because like Tony pointed out, I was really frustrated as an economic research about the way the weight of the spawning stock. For me, I would love to know, and I think we all would, right? We'd love to know how many stripers are in the water in total, because then we can kind of get a better picture of what we're doing and how to manage them. But these are, like I said, these are not edgy. I think these are just things that if you are a bunch of angler advocates, when someone like ASGA or another nonprofit comes along and says, hey, we want to raise money for science, you're like, no, like, I want you to like do something. This counts as doing something. This helps us make better policy decisions and better improvements in the long run. So these are like low-hanging fruit. This is the stuff that I think is a little more edgy, but could help us, again, close that gap, okay? So that is, you know, cheers to the future. Cheers to fish that, you know, quote, unquote, don't have value. And thank y'all for your time. If I can, just because I know we were going a mile a minute here, what I want you to take away from this is, one, when you have a catch and release fish, it's not worth $0. There's actually a good dollar amount that we can measure, and we need to do a better job about that. Two, as we advocate for fisheries, it's not like apologizing and be like, no, we just love them too. No. You have an economic right to these fish, and you need to be clear about that, right? And to kind of circle this all the way up, again, what do we do about it? We want, as anglers, to have a property right over the fish, right? That's how we close this gap. We want a property right around the fish so that it has that economic valuation, so it can be bargained. And again, like I said, one day we might be able to buy out. So again, it's not like, again, we're not trying to dismiss commercial fishing. We're just saying like, hey, I really value these fish, and if you want the money, I'm happy to pay it, okay? I'll open up to questions or again, people who want to throw things at me. Yeah.
Fascinated by the concept of property rights. As a business guy, you know,
it's the end all be all in the econ.
And now, obviously, we're here talking about the fishing industry, conservation. Now, another, we'll call it natural resource based industries, to be far outside the world. Have you seen that successfully executed in a similar dynamic to what we're talking about here conceptually with fishing?
I wish, but I think that's what's new and novel here is that recreational anglers are probably, aside from maybe like birders, and because they're birders, right, they want to experience the birds, but they don't want to kill them, but there's monetary value attached to them, and that's a huge industry. And again, this is where you really want to throw stuff at me, you know, associating catch and release angling to birding, but like birders are starting to realize like they don't want to pick fights with Ducks Unlimited. Why? Because Ducks Unlimited builds all the habitat that birders love. It's weird, right? Because birders are like, I would rather you not shoot the birds, right? But at the same point, like, wow, I really enjoy having all these, all these wetland projects that are going out. And again, I'm not shilling for Ducks Unlimited. I'm just saying there's an interesting tension there, right? That you have a group that's very against hunting partnering up with a team that is very pro hunting, right? So that would be the only one that I would say is quasi-related to what we're talking about. But that's where, again, serendipitously, that conversation I had yesterday with another natural resource economist, he literally just kind of looked at me cross-eyed and he was like, I didn't know. He's like, about y'all. I mean, just catch and release anglers in general. He's like, I just thought people were pissed when they got above their bag limit. I was like, no, there's a lot of us yahoos who literally just go out and throw fish back. And he's like, really? And I was like, dude, it's multi-million. I mean, we don't do a good job assessing this. I tried to work with the Yellow Dog crew just to kind of tabulate how much money runs through their lodges. And again, I don't think they want those numbers public, so I get it. But like, it's a massive industry. So we're kind of in new territory, but I don't want that to be like, oh, then we can't have a say or we can't do anything. No. That means we can run through brick walls because we're proving something that's very cool. We have data, we have math, we can start to assert that. And I guess if we have to make friends with birders, so be it.
How does this equate with catch and keep? So you've got the numbers for what Powell will pay for a striped bass in the flats, but if you kill that fish, how does that work?
Yeah, so to be honest, it gives my head knots, because think about it, like, talk to your favorite, in your head right now, if you're having a beer with your friend who is a catch and keep angler, where's their valuation coming from? An economist would say it's they're avoiding having to pay the market price for fish. I'm like, no, it's they're having fun and they get to keep fillets as a bonus. And to answer your question in a very opaque way, the way I think about it, and it's actually something that Tony and I partnered up on, killing that redfish bill, is that I think about it as the extinguishing of a perpetual value of resource. Does that make sense? So when I kill a striped bass, that valuation's gone. And so if it was going to live for 10, 15 more years or whatever, that resources extinguished, and we need to make sure that it's going at the highest value. So that's where, again, if you get into the moratorium world, which I would never wish that on anybody, but if you have like folks who are like deeply advocating for killing fish, then make them pay for it, and make them pay the true, which is going to be higher than that market value for it. That was
our value. They wanted to sell those tags for
$25, right? And that's where I like
fish, and our value was like just south of $2,000.
Yeah, and as an economist,
so you want to do that? Let's talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, let's have that conversation.
Or I was telling Tony, like, he's the advocate, and like Tony can take the stand of like, no, we will never sell bull redfish under any context. I'm a soulless economist. Remember, I have red hair. I'm like, yo, if they want to pay $2,500 for shitty meat, let them live, right? But that's an economist's take, right? It's like that's where we've perfectly paired the valuation to how much people are willing to pay. So I know I've gone like four circles around the sun about this. I don't really know, but I think if you're thinking about catch and keep anglers, there needs to be some diligence on thinking about the valuation they're extinguishing, and that needs to be imported into valuation of the stock. And that may be fishing licenses, that may be...
And Edgar, like, I don't think we're there in the conversation yet, you know, as far as like where the rubber meets the road in management. Where we are in conversation is like, there's a value besides dead fish. Most of the valuations that we see, there has been some work done on striped bass, but most of the valuations that we see are like, what is the value of this dead fish, whether it was caught recreationally or commercially? And we're kind of like, can we just have a part of the discussion? We're not saying we're better, we're not saying anything, but it's, you know, we're saying, holy shit, you need to figure this out, because there is a massive economy around it. And if you look, you know, they've kept records since the mid-80s, and like 90% of striped bass are released. And that's been, we've had a two fish limit, we've had a one fish limit, we've had different, you know, a minimum size, a slot limit. There's been massive changes since, I think, 86 or 88, 86 when it started. And it is, that line is just consistent. You know, people choose. Some would say, oh, well, it's because the strict regulations. Well, the regulations weren't so strict a while back, and we still chose to release about 90% of the fish. So, you know, all we're saying right now is like the bare minimum, looking for crumbs, like at least have consideration for what we do, because unlike birding, unless you just smack one with your car when you're going to the marsh to look at them, like, we do kill fish no matter how hard we try not to. And pretending that we don't is not being honest with yourself as a fisherman. So, like, you know, we take our toll on the resource as well, but they need to consider our impacts, you know, because they're pretty positive.
Now, this is more about wondering out loud, sort of a big question. So I'm a manufacturer, fishing tackle. I'm sitting next to a retailer who each touch tens of thousands of people. There's other manufacturers or guides. So collectively, we're touching hundreds of thousands of individuals with high engagement with relationships. So there's a lot of data flowing through all of our businesses every day. And I would say 90x% of this business is all supporting, you know, what we're all talking about here, catch and release, a balanced economic perspective between, you know, the commercial, the simple, you know, the mid and the range. And so I'm, I guess, wondering out loud, this is a big question for this, like, are there best practices for data we should all be capturing that could help someone like you? And if there was like a, you know, like a metadata structure, like, because, you know, we have very, for example, my company, we have very high, you know, we do a lot of surveys and share that information back. So we have huge amounts of data, but are there best practices for, you know, to help you or help the industry, or is there stuff we should be looking at or holding or sharing or just, you know, we're here, just...
So if you're speaking for all the manufacturers in the room, that's awesome. No, I'd love to do a survey that would help us get a baseline of the catch and release valuation. There are other tools besides travel costs that were used. Again, another conversation I had with another economist. I came up with this hypothetical question. You're on a charter trip, and the guide says, Kyle's not here anymore. Charter says, hey, I know a spot where I can get you a 45-incher. Are you in? And everyone in this room says, hell yes. And he goes, but it's going to cost you. What I can do, if we run that survey, get everybody put in. How much would they pay for that moment? We've now got hard, fast price, and that may help us move the needle a little bit. Let's have that conversation. But like in best practices, this actually goes back to what Cody was talking about. What y'all are trying to do, and this is me as, again, the Alabamian oxymoron economist, right? Stepping back is what you're trying to do is make the transformation that largemouth bass had years ago, where who anymore celebrates filleting largemouth bass? I mean, it's not like killing a permit. Well, you'll get shot, but no one, you know, like, it's like, oh, look, I'm frying up largemouth bass. Like, cool story, bro. Who cares, right? And that's where you're trying to go. We are trying, y'all are holistically trying to push a culture of like catch and release angling, not because you're better than it, but it's just like, this is the way the world we want to live. So for me, it is an information story. It is a communication strategy. Again, Cody's the better person to talk about that with, but one thing I couldn't unsee, Tony, this is your fault, is when y'all are talking about like, hey, things are good right now, but they're about to be bad. Humans are horrible at this. We're always bad. Like if you're like, hey, apocalypse coming in 5 years, you're like, cool, I'm gonna start drinking right now, right? We typically don't handle lagged consequences really well. That's just human nature. But what I realize is that what Tony is telling y'all, right? And again, this is just, I don't have this cohort structure, but if you think about how, like, here's your 2013 cohort, they grow, and then they die. Then you have, you know, 2015, they grow, they die. If Tony is telling us that the data is pointing to some really bad cohorts, so this is time and this is pounds, okay? If this is starting to happen, Okay. One, human beings were horrible at seeing this coming, but I also realized that, look, again, some of y'all are like, no more math. But look, if we add these curves up to the total amount of fish that are swimming around, Tony, y'all are both right. I'm having a really good striped bass right now. I'm catching a lot because it's adding these cohorts all together. The problem is that you're at the tip of the mountain and you're about to start falling off, and then you're like, what the hell happened? And again, humans with lag consequences, we don't adjust really well to that. Okay? And so for me, and this is where I need to step out. I am no longer being a scientist, I'm being an advocate. Okay? For me, on the data and communication side, I think there's a spin that says, I want my kids and grandkids deserve better. It's not that we're gonna die and we're falling off a cliff and it's doom and gloom and that we're gonna shut down business because no one's gonna buy lures anymore because the end is coming. It's saying, this is freaking awesome and I want my kids to have it. And so to do that, hey, we're going to do some policy action that the fisheries biologist, and again, I'm stepping out of my realm, I'm not a fisheries biologist, but whatever fisheries biologists say we need to do to protect those next spawning routines, activate anglers to realize that there's this lagged consequence coming and they have a seat at the table. They can advocate for the rights of their children and their grandkids to have the right to fish for striped bass, but it's kind of, to quote Tony, it's go time. And so that's the I can't unsee the math, and I can't unsee the value y'all have as tackle shop owners, as lure manufacturers. If you do have that data, what behavioral economics calls gentle nudges. You don't have to smack them and say that the world's about to end. You just have to say, hey, we want better for our kids and grandkids, and we see an opportunity, and we got to figure out what the opportunity is. But it's like a gentle, consistent stream of information to activate folks towards that. And like I said, if we run a survey, then you can also clap. You know, then you can clap really loudly and say, "Look how awesome we are! This is how much we love striped bass." So I can be the Cody in the room. I can see there's a lot of promise as a fishery moves from commodity to like renewable resource. That's a wonderful thing. And I would say y'all are in the growing pains of that for striped bass, like largemouth bass, it's already there. Permit, bonefish, tarpon, they're already there. I feel like striped bass is getting close, okay? And I think, you know, this again, personal belief, not, this is advocate, not scientist. It's not about wagging fingers. It's encouragement of like, yo, this is really cool. This is really valuable. This is what I want for my kids. I think I'm out of time.
So,